And welcome to the Cognitive Rampage Myths of Fitness Edition, basically hosted by Naudi Aguilar, founder of Functional Patterns. All of you that watch or have been watching, you know the man already, so I don't need a long introduction, but welcome back. I'm going to get right into this one here in a little bit, man, but you were telling me, dude, you were on the end of a, what, three-day fast?
Oh, yeah, I've been fasting since, I can't even remember. I'm hoping I'm going to still be somewhat coherent for this thing. I don't feel bad. I just feel kind of like I'm tranquil. I just feel tranquil. So Wednesday night. So it's Wednesday morning. So yeah, this is the third day. I haven't really actually eaten a meal since about like a real meal since about like 4 o'clock on Sunday. So it's 4 o'clock on Sunday, and right now it's Wednesday at and it's 9 o'clock. So whatever the hell that is, that might already be 3 days. I don't even know. But I'm supposed to not be eating until Saturday. So pretty much all I'm just doing is vegetables. Pretty much just taking vegetable soup in, and I've been drinking bone broth. That's kind of really all I'm doing, and just drinking lots of water, lots of liquids.
Lots of water. We're gonna need lots of water.
Yeah, lots of water and some Funyuns.
You did. You picked up on it. Ah, wasn't you?
Of course. Fuck yeah, man. Half-baked, it's a classic.
Man, he picked up on it. There's a rare few, man, that pick up on a few movie lines I drop, man.
Yeah, I've only smoked weed a few times, but for me, that movie was a classic. It's like, I don't know, for some reason it resonated with me. It was fucking hilarious.
You put Chappelle on the map, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, maybe now your brain functioning doesn't have... Well, you know what? I'm kind of curious, man, because I fast about twice a week, and I spread it out Sundays and Thursdays, and I do an 8-hour fast on Thursdays, and I'll do a 12 to 16-hour fast on Sunday with nothing but water, just water on those 2 days.
Mm-hmm. And,
you know, I notice somebody asked me about my lipids and my metabolism, and after I come off of the fast, I would have to say that my eyes feel bigger than my metabolism really is, which is odd. Like, I feel hungrier than I really am, and sometimes I'll just feed the mouth hole anyway just because, you know. So, you know, I don't know. And the testosterone level seems pretty spiked when I'm coming off of the fast, actually, as opposed to being right in the beginning of it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, for me, I just feel like I went to sleep last night. I woke up at 4 in the morning. I woke up. Couldn't go back to sleep because I just feel fucking weird. And then I wound up getting on a softball and a lacrosse ball and just started rolling out, just rolled my muscles out. And some specific spots that I know are my restrictions right now that are impeding me from just being able to function better, helping me deal with my anxiety. And then I did that for a bit, released maybe for about 45 minutes, completely knocked me out, went right back to bed. And you just woke me up. You woke me up with this invite right now, man. So I'm just like... I'm about like 15 minutes awake right now, so it's like, hopefully I do well. But yeah, it's pretty crazy, man. Like when I went back to sleep, I had some deep sleep, like hard dreams. I don't remember what I was dreaming about, but it was pretty hard dreams.
Yeah, you have to remember, man. I do my own form of dream interpretation. I know it's all wacky and stuff, but it's kind of fun to do. Not according to any books or writing. I just do my own little weird thing. We'll have to talk about that.
Yeah, my dreams are always like practical. They never. Nothing's ever like crazy out of the imaginary. No, I've never had anything crazy happen in my fucking dreams, really. Like it's like Earth, but in a dream world. It's fucking weird. And I don't, like some people talk about like having crazy dreams where they're flying and whatnot. I'm like, man, you know. Well, I'm kind of glad. I think if I was flying, I'd probably be stressed out. I'd be like, I don't know if I should be doing this. I don't know.
Well, you'd be trying to dissect the functional patterns. Imagine that you have functional. Practical dreams. Imagine. I couldn't imagine.
I know. It is kind of ridiculous when I think about it. I'm like, everybody's having these crazy ones. I'm like, oh, yeah. I was pretty much just talking to a friend, and I was actually, in many instances, especially when I do like master courses or when I do like student courses, when I go to sleep at night, I don't have any dreams outside of training. So I'll actually be innovating techniques in my dreams. It's fucking weird. So I'll be in there actually like training, and I'm like, oh, I wake up and I barely feel like I rested because I was already working in the dream. So yeah, it's kind of it can kind of be not so good in certain senses. But yeah, like that happens to me quite frequently. I've actually established techniques in my dreams. I wake up. There's one that I did for the ankle maybe not too long ago, and I was thinking about it in my dreams. And yeah, I woke up and I was like, I got to try that shit out. And then I went into the gym, tried it out, and I wound up working pretty well. So yeah, it's kind of weird.
Well, there's actually science behind some of that, man. I'm not the expert, but looking up flow state work at the Flow Genome Project with Stephen Kotler, there's people that are attempting, right, that, oh, man, there's like four different levels of being able to access flow. And coming out of the end of a sleep can be a very difficult time to access flow. But then shortly after that, a lot of people find themselves very creative within the first 15 minutes of waking up and being able to open up and expand on things. I find myself doing the same. I have a lot of my epiphany ideas, if you will, as either I'm just about falling asleep, laying down, or when I'm starting to wake up. And I wonder, you know, if we dive right into the you know, the all-American bench press, that if you really are, you're a fucking crazy dude. You're fucking pissing, bro. You're crazy as fuck.
Oh, no, no, no. I'm pouring water. No, no, no. I probably would piss, though. I really wouldn't care, but yeah.
You crazy fuck. You fucking would do that.
I probably would. I generally tend to not, I mean, I think I say a lot of shit online. I think it's a lot of things people think about, but they just don't want to express. And so, I mean, yeah, I just poured some water. So I'm just, yeah, I'm just, so you know, I'm not opposed to pissing. So sometimes you may actually end up finding that I may start pissing. So
I wouldn't put it past you, man. But I mean, so let's jump into this thing. Why I got this first 15 minutes of being awake, man, and see if we can snap into a flow state and put you into this. I mean, let's face it, the bench press is where, right? That's where everyone starts, right? If you're playing the sports, you're playing football, whatever you're doing, your friend walks you in, lays down, and bench presses.
Yeah, that's where my manhood started. I remember I was about like in 6th, 7th grade, and I couldn't bench press shit.
That's and ever said that where my manhood started, man. That's right on fucking target, man.
Yeah, that was like the first lift that questioned my manhood. And when I was about 6th, 7th grade, I was a late bloomer. I probably didn't really hit puberty probably until I was like 17, 18. I don't think I grew hair on my nuts until I think I was like 16. So prior to that, I didn't have any muscle or anything like that. And then, so I kind of avoided the bench press for a while because I was like, man, that's just not my thing. I got to stay away from it. And then finally, when I hit 16, 17, I started gaining a little bit of muscle. Like genetically speaking, in my family, we're typically mesomorphs. I started hitting the bench press. And by age 20, I had gotten close to 300 pounds as a one rep max on my bench press. That was keeping my hips on the ground, not doing the hip humping and all that. So I was big into the bench press. That's where my manhood was tested, and I was weighing like 140 pounds, 135 pounds at the time, and I had a pretty good bench. So it's not like I wasn't good at the bench. But at a certain point, you pass through life, and it's not at a certain point you pass through life. I moved down to San Diego and I became a trainer, and when I affiliated with the people that I did, I wound up. I wound up realizing that, you know, the bench press didn't really mean shit. Like, about, what was it, 10 years ago? No, maybe about 13 years ago, the fitness industry was kind of going through a renaissance, at least in the progressive field, where people were really respecting biomechanics. And I fell right into, like, maybe like the tail end of that renaissance. But it was during that time that Olympic lifting was considered stupid. It was during that time that bench presses were also considered stupid, that just heavy lifting was counterintuitive to athletic capabilities, to rehabilitation, things along those lines. And that's where I kind of got brainwashed to a certain degree, was by these people. Now, these people were very intelligent. They weren't idiots. They were critical thinkers. We'd be watching like crazy documentaries like Zeitgeist together and, What the Bleep, we'd be watching things like that. So we weren't talking about your average gym idiots that were in the industry at this time. We actually had very smart people in it, at least in this gym that I went into. So I mean, I had maybe like about 10 trainers to choose from that were all very smart in their own way, and they all respected functionality. And I mean, although they weren't talking about, you know, like training humans in relation to their human characteristics, that's kind of something I think I coined myself. They were at least questioning the parameters of what was useful training and what was practical for people. And the bench press was one of those things that was practical. So by the time I was about 23, 24, I stopped doing bench presses just because they seemed to be counterproductive and they were counterintuitive to what I was trying to do, which at some point I said, you know what, I just want to be healthy and I want to be strong in a way that actually matters. And when you begin to realize the direct application of a bench press, you can't can relate certain aspects of a bench press, but you can't really. It's when you think about how your core is activating, the position that you're in, when you think about how the pecs are actually engaging during that exercise, it's completely outside of the lines of how human evolution, how our evolution adapted the pec major to begin with. Like, every muscle on your body is adapted for a specific purpose. The glute max is clearly a sprinting muscle. It's clearly there to help us propel us to our gait, to walking and sprinting. So that's why we have glute maxes. That's why chimpanzees don't have a big butt. Humans do have a big, big butt. And so with humans, we also have fairly big pec majors. If you look at, like, Jesse Owens or a lot of other sprinters, you'll notice they have huge freaking pecs. And that's also facilitated by running. Running, but especially throwing. And so when you start thinking about the bench press itself, if you're actually trying to develop strong pecs, like, let's say for me, I'm really, really good at punching. Like, I can punch really fucking hard. Like, I've put up videos and whatnot. I can hit pretty hard. And so the reason I can hit hard is because the way I've trained my pecs, the way that I've facilitated the activation of my pecs, is I train them in multiple functions. So when you're doing a bench press, you're only incorporating this function called horizontal adduction, right? That's only one function to the pec major. Whereas if I train it how I do here at Functional Patterns, I train it on internal rotation, horizontal adduction. I trained it on a shoulder flexion. There's a way of meshing all this stuff together. But really what I'm doing is I'm replicating throwing mechanics oftentimes when I actually train my pecs. Also, the way people train their pecs is when you're doing a bench press, you're training the pec major from the breastbone. You're pulling on the humerus going this way. But if you think about oftentimes the functions that you get out of your pec major, you're supposed to actually do this. The pec major has to come from the activation has to come from the humerus and pull the breastbone off to the side. So the way people are training it is completely counterintuitive when you do a bench press because you're only training it from one point, and that's where you end up getting the rounded shoulders, that's where you end up getting the kyphosis, that's where you end up getting that shortening of these tissues, and it inhibits your capability of expanding your arms. Now, what people have been doing to counter this internal rotation, they've just been doing a lot of scapular retractions, a lot of thoracic mobility work and whatnot, but what they've never found a way to institute is how do you bring the pec major back into activation after you've done these mobility systems. So a lot of times when people talk about, well, you know what, I do my bench press, but then I just do a lot of pulls coming back, that helps open it up. There's a difference between stretching a muscle and then eccentrically potentiating a muscle. So if I do a bicep curl and I'm doing the reverse phase, that's an eccentric contraction that I'm doing out of my bicep. It's very easy to train that in the bicep, at least in that confines of a bicep curl. Now, with the pec major, it's not that easy. It's like you just dropping the bar down slowly on a bench press doesn't just train the eccentric potential. It only trains it on an eccentric potential relative to a bar coming down in that horizontal adduction. But if I'm going to throw a ball, I'm going to be going like this with my arm. I don't know if you guys can see that or not. That eccentric needs to happen on this function too. Also, if I'm going to run backward and my arm's going to get the reverse drive, there needs to be an eccentric potential out of my pec major there too. And that connection is completely lost as far as I'm concerned. This is why I always challenge fitness industry professionals to post their gait cycles, to post their running. And I'd love for Olympic lifters and power lifters and people who do the bench press, I'd love to see them run because I already know exactly what's going to happen when they run. The bench press is going to facilitate a pattern of elbows, their elbows flaring out and doing this kind of stuff. If you look at CrossFitters at the CrossFit Games, their arms never stay at their side, no matter how hard they try. And you can tell sometimes these CrossFitters try keeping their arms at their side, but they can't do it because a pec major has been wired to do another thing. So when I think about bench press and the implications that it has on the body is that it doesn't respect evolution in the slightest. You're laying down for one. When you press on something or if you're going to maneuver something, you have to connect that into your lower body, and the bench press doesn't really do any of that.
Wow, man. I've seen – so you covered a few different ways that people have tried to modify the press to make it do multiple things, like the negatives you were talking about, you know, bringing them in slow. I've seen people do things to where they grab wider and they come deep to the chest, and they'll do little short bursts deep and then short bursts high. I mean, is there any – I've even seen people where they lay down and then lift their legs up.
Okay.
Indian style.
Let me get in. So the problem is that people just don't really know what the fuck they're doing in regards to the pec major – to activating the pec major. why? Let me just give you guys a little insight that you've probably never heard and you'll never hear again. And I'm sure people will kind of be like, "What the fuck?" But I'm gonna say it anyway because they're probably gonna get confused by it. But when you activate one pec from right here, from where the breastbone is, you have to think that there's a myofascial force transfer. So like when I activate one pec major to pull my breastbone off to the side, the other one is going to then pull off from the breastbone. So it's kind of hard to explain, but I'm thinking, okay, if I'm going to pull this pec major and go this way, that's pulling from my humerus. It's anchored from my humerus. Then that's going to lead to a contraction happening from my breastbone to pull my humerus on this side. So if I'm going to throw a punch, for instance, a left hook, the way that my torso actually turns is my right pec major here is going to pull on my humerus this way. That's going to lead to a myofascial force transmission, a neuromuscular connection reaching across my pec major that's going to pull my shoulder across this way, and then you see my hook just go whoop, and fly across. There is no way you can get a bench press to really replicate this shit. It doesn't work if you try doing a bench press. There's ways that you could potentially modify it that I could think about right now, maybe on a Swiss ball where you can emphasize some thoracic rotation. But if you're doing this on a flat bench, incline, or decline press, it doesn't matter what modification you're doing. You're not incorporating this origin to insertion, insertion to origin connection going across the spectrum to the pecs. Furthermore, those connections actually happen at the thumb. They happen right here at your thumb, and they go all the way up to your shoulder, across to your other pec, all the way across the other way, to the other hand. So this kind of connection has to happen. It's impossible for this not to be the case. Then this comes down to whether myofascial force transmission exists, where one muscle connects to another muscle, and that's how they work. But, I mean, if you're thinking about functioning with your body, I mean, this exists. I test it all the time, too, guys. I have people who run, who do this CrossFit-style gorilla run, and then I do what I do with them, and they're able to keep their arms much more straight. And it's because I do three-dimensional pectoralis major training. I don't do linear training. Again, Adam, just people have this linear mindset about everything they do. You know, you go to school, you get good grades, or you play sports. You go to college, you get a job. Once you get your job, during that time, hopefully you found somebody to marry. If you don't, you find somebody in your 30s, you get married to them. At that point, the common trend seems to be that people tend to get divorced at a certain age. But then they still have kids. They take care of their kids the rest of their life. Their kids go to college. You get old and you die. This is kind of like the linear mindset, and it extends into training. Well, in training, you just lift weights. You do what you do, and there's no point in questioning it. And you know one thing that I thought was interesting yesterday? I was watching, I'll go to Instagram, and it shows the recommended things that you should see. And I saw just a bunch of people just like unbelievable, like, I think the next podcast we could potentially do could be on social vanity disorder, where people are just, I mean, so, so shallow about what they do. But when I look at what they're doing and just building muscle, it's very comfortable to stay in that reality, in that linear mindset, because you never have to truly challenge yourself. You just go to the gym, you focus on your vanity, and that's it. So the truth of the matter is, Adam, a lot of what I'm going to say is going to fall on deaf ears, unfortunately. I've kind of come to realize that over the last few years, but it really struck me yesterday where social vanity disorder is everywhere, and people could give two fucks about what they're doing with their pec major until they get older and they really end up damaging their shoulders, or they end up getting one vertebra or one part of the spine that's causing a lot of pain. Then at that point, that may end up being the time when they have to, reevaluate what they're actually doing. But ultimately, most of what I'm going to say here is going to fall on deaf ears. But the point that I'm going to make is the pec, the way that you train the pecs during a bench press has very little transferability to the movements that you do in reality. If you're going to throw, run, if you're going to punch somebody, if you're going to kick somebody, the pec major is always active in everything you do. So if you have a glute max in your lower body, your pec major is pretty much the inverse. If you think about how your arms swing, right? Your triceps or your quadriceps, your biceps or your hamstrings, this concept is present. So the upper body and the lower body operate inversely to each other, and there's contralateral reciprocations and ipsilateral reciprocations that happen on the body, and the pec major has nothing to fucking do with this. If anything, it completely deactivates your pec major and the way that it was designed to work, and I myself, after testing things as much as I have, I just find that it's not really a necessary exercise. I've tried to bring it back too. I've done it. I've had I've, there's times where I've done my chest flies, which you can make a chest fly more or less functional, but I only had to transition it because I didn't know how to make it three-dimensional. But anyway, I ran it on with a bunch of stuff. I'm sure you probably have other things you got to ask me.
No, man, we you cover a lot of things. I mean, just in the proof in the pudding, you show me a 102, 103 mile an hour fastball pitcher in the MLB that is Jack Diesel. For the most part, you got a long, lanky, you know, very thin. I mean, that's the movement and the throw. And in many colleges now, the quarterbacks, unless they're a running option type team, are any throwing quarterbacks are being taken off on the bench press. And they don't do them. I mean, look at someone like Peyton Manning. Again, you got that fastball-looking swimmer build, that tall, long, you know, not muscular, not big. And you don't see that thickness. And, you know, I think, you know, the cognitive dissonance is what you talk about when you say deaf ears. Is, you know, that's actual psychology. Is, you know, we say things like falling on deaf ears, but the truth is it hits people's cognitive dissonance. When something that can be so real is so destructive to our value or belief that we discard it. And there was an experiment done years ago. It had to do with the Mississippi River and an area they knew that would flood at least 3 miles. So they informed everybody in the area. They knew the flooding would take place around these given days. They told everybody within 7 miles of there. Now, everyone left within mile four, five, six, and seven. And as you got closer in, pretty much everyone left around three, a few stayed. And when you got to mile one within the river, two people left out of 50. And half those people had to be rescued from their roof and everything else. And this was part of the research done on the cognitive dissonance. It became so real, or it was so devastating, that no way could I lose my entire house and everything, that they completely just acted like it didn't happen.
So, that's fucking crazy.
So that research, when you look at fitness people that are so in and so close to the river that their money, their income, or their manhood even, bro, we spoke to at the beginning, if the manhood, if your ego, if your status, if this plays into, you know, your house and you're so close to the river, and then a guy like you is coming around going, hey, it's flooding over here and science is backing me up on this, well, some people are just going to stay on their house until they got to be rescued off the river. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. What it's coming down to for me, Adam, is I've had to kind of come to realize that I'm at a stage where it's like people in power are not going to relinquish their position. I think we have to take their position, unfortunately, because I've been making challenges scientifically. I'm willing to go under scientific scrutiny, and I don't have any one person really coming at me. The only people that want to become scientific and tested are the people that are already involved in it. It's the physical therapists that are doing this. I have physical therapists here in the U.S., in Mexico, in Germany, in the Netherlands. I have people all over the world, even in Australia, that are already testing what we're doing. But nobody who's a naysayer, who criticizes what I say, seems to want to take in my scientific challenges. I put this forth on many occasions. But yeah, this it's so... like a mind-numbing when I think that anybody could logically try and validate a bench press or even a squat or a deadlift. It really is fucking mind-numbing because especially when you look at most athletes, I'd say like maybe most athletes when you see them are not big, huge, jacked beasts. I mean, every once in a while you look at, let's say, like a Tyrone Woodley who knocked out Robbie Lawler this last weekend. He's pretty jacked. He's pretty swole. But even then, it's like, I wonder how much shelf life he's going to have with his body because he has all those damn muscles. It's like as soon as he finds a fighter that can slip a right hand or weave under a right hand properly, after the second, third round, what's that going to mean for this person? So it's clear that the most well-rounded fighters are not going to have this big, bulky, huge physique. My perceptions on why I stopped doing a lot of big, like heavier lifts too, it started with a guy named Fedor Emelianenko, and I believe I talked about this on a prior podcast, but Fedor Emelianenko is this Russian fighter who is chubbier than shit. I mean, this guy did not look like an athlete, but yet he was decimating... Yeah, go ahead.
He was a fucking beast, man.
Yeah, and so he was decimating people, and I was like, whoa, what the hell? This guy, I was used to seeing like Randy Couture, who was fairly shredded, pretty athletic looking, and then I look at Fedor and I'm like, dude, this guy doesn't look athletic at all. Like, there's no athletic potential, but yet he moves like a freaking monster. What the hell is going on here, you know? And then I start looking at his spinal alignment, that he's always in a thoracic extension, he has a neutral spine, and I'm like, holy shit, I mean, I didn't realize that till later on down the road, maybe like a couple years, like maybe like about maybe like 6-7 years later when I finally got into training people. Then I started noticing like characteristics about the guy, and I was like, holy crap. And then I actually started seeing him train. I saw a video of him actually training, and he was actually using bands and moving things this way, and I was like, huh, maybe I need to start doing the same thing with like pulley machines and shit. And so I started doing this stuff with pulley machines, and the next thing you know, I'm doing what I am now. But I, at no point was I assuming that the bench press got that guy to where he is. Most of the Russians aren't really doing a lot of that crap. He has like a modified version that he does of a bench press, just with a 45-pound bar, and he'll kind of like jump and propel it forward, which to me seems fairly relevant. I mean, from what I've seen how he does it, he always makes every movement he does a kinetic link, whether he's using a kettlebell, slamming a sledgehammer, or even doing the work with the bands. Everything that he does is like a whip. And many of the ideas that I got in terms of my conceptualizing force vectors, I got from Fedor and watching him train. And I had to, because I looked at the guy and I was like, what the fuck? This guy is not a genetic freak. He is far from a genetic freak, and there's something that he must be doing that must be making him fairly successful. And I mean, he was just very well kinetically linked, but I think a good deal of that had to do with his training, and I think it probably did help facilitate more of those connections that he used to make when he was in a fight. But yeah, I don't know where people get these, draw their conclusions of saying that. This is a conclusion that everybody draws, and I'm gonna bring this up. And again, like our other podcasts are getting a decent amount of play. I mean, people are watching them. But I will say this, Adam. I have hundreds of thousands of people, potentially millions of people that have seen. Well, I have millions of people that have seen my videos, and a good portion of them think I'm an asshole. But what I want to put forth is these topics where I know they're avoiding them. They're not wanting to confront what I'm saying, because this is it. Athletes should not be the benchmark of why you do what you do with your training. They should not be the ones that are dictating why you do what you do.
Yeah.
Athletes, for the majority of – just because athletes do something does not mean that you follow them. And I want to reiterate this point podcast after podcast after podcast, because that's really the only reason that athletes have to support what they do. They can't actually logically break down the biomechanics. They can't really logically break down how muscles are firing, because at the end of the day, all you want a muscle to do is do this under tension and do that under tension. That's it. And you want it to fatigue under this length, and you want it to fatigue under that length. That's it. That is fucking training all the way. That is it. And if you're only training that relative to one plane of motion, you're not going to meet the demands that you're facing in life. This is clear logic. And any time I deal with any of these people, it's never – they say, well, there's scientific studies, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, explain the science to me. When I hear psychologists, when they do a study, they say, well, this happened because of this, 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 and this. And these are the conclusions that we're drawing. But if I hear Robert Sapolsky saying, well, because of this molecule here, and then this hormone gets secreted here, we end up noticing this kind of a behavior in this organism. But at no point do I ever hear somebody from the field of exercise say, well, I do this exercise because of this reason, this reason, this reason, this reason, and is backed by, and the scientific study revealed this right here, and this is the reason I do it. But then if I throw in a question of how does that relate to three-dimensional capabilities if you're pressing something straight forward and you're not using your legs, how does that relate to reality? Well, I'm not going to get into that. Athletes do it. Since athletes do it, that's why I do it, and that's it. End of story. I don't need to elaborate any further, because athletes do it, and because, you know, LeBron James is my hero, and you know, whatever. I don't watch really sports that much. Whatever football player that's relevant right now, who's killing it, is doing that kind of lifting, I'm going to do it too. Go ahead.
There's two areas too with the athletes leading it. There's a question at the end of this one for, because we're wrapping up to about 30 minutes, man. So we'll do shoulders next week, but. You know, when we talked about indoctrination, your manhood, if you will, in the beginning, right now, in basically every sport that you walk into, like football, et cetera, especially, and in the majority of high schools, I'm not going to say all, but when you walk into that high school, the weightlifting coach or the strength training coach, the PE class, the football team, it's the max out on the bench press. How many times can you push 185, 225? Even the NFL, the combine. Yep. They're posting those ideas of how many times can you do this bench press. And here comes the question at the back end, though, bro, is, you know, they indoctrinate them from the beginning that this is not only a test of your manhood, but how well you'll bear somehow on a football field, which I've never found much relevance there except maybe pushing a guy off. But like you say, you're standing up. So when you lay down on the bench, and to bring in some science behind this, there is tons of science and research that's now pointing to the bench press is creating terrible shoulder injuries. And if you look at bodybuilders, if you look at football players, you know, strength trainers, the shoulder becomes, I mean, I'm one of them, right? I dealt with it years ago. And the shoulder becomes almost weak, and they're connecting somehow this bench press to the shoulder injuries, happening some tears or some things in the back end.
Yep, no, I mean, honestly, Adam, I don't follow the science. I don't need to follow scientific studies because I'm conducting science every day in my facility. I see the results of what people have. I get to conduct science clinically. I test this shit every day. So when they start conducting these science saying that the shoulders are becoming bothered and whatnot, it's like, duh. It's like, yeah, I knew this shit 10 years ago.
Right, right. So
what would he do? It's like, it's not, yeah, the bench press is going to make your shoulders weak. Why? Because it's only training the pec major in one context. And you can say, well, I'm going to do military presses too. I'll do shoulder presses going upward, and that's going to ultimately lead me to balancing my shoulders out. No, it's not that easy, dude. When you think of the pec major, there's a pec major to pec major connection. There's a serratus to serratus connection. There's an oblique to oblique connection, and they're happening like this. It's a rotational function, people. It's a rotational function. So you can't – the pec major has nothing to do with this. The bicep curl has nothing to do with this. The shoulder press has nothing to fucking do with this. There is no rotational force being put on the spine. There's no lateral contralateral reciprocations happening in the body. There's no lateral line tension. There's no front to back. All it is just you moving your freaking arms. And it that does not apply to the mechanics that we find ourselves in reality that we find ourselves in when it comes to athletics or anything along those lines. So we can't – the fact that they even try and relate these functions, it makes no sense to me. They're not trying to relate. That's the problem. Is that you just get, like you're saying, people get indoctrinated into this belief that this is good for them. And it's not just the indoctrination that's there. This whole system gets put around the athlete where they have to do all this nonsensical bullshit. Otherwise, the coaches get mad at them. So the athlete says, well, you know what? I don't want to be the rebel in the group and not do the training. Otherwise, I might get kicked off the team. And unless you're like a LeBron James or something like that, you may not be able to get away with that. You will probably have to participate in this stupid team training that all it does is just institute more dysfunctions and facilitate more damage, and it minimizes performance. So the reality is, it's not just the indoctrination; it's the system itself. As much as you want to live a life, non-materialistic or whatever it may be, you end up getting sucked into this shit no matter what you do. You can't just move out to the forest and go live out there, build a log cabin, and just go live in the forest. The government's going to figure that out, and they're going to cut you down and say, no, you can't be doing this shit. You need to pay for this land, and you need to pay property taxes, and you need to make money to keep this fucking land. So no matter what it is, it's not just the indoctrination of money. It's not the indoctrination of profit alone that you need to make money to survive. The system forces you to make money. Just in the same, it works with the athletes. You're indoctrinated into a set of beliefs, and then this set of beliefs is reinforced by a structure that forces you to do all this nonsensical bullcrap that doesn't make any sense. Because it doesn't make sense. The athletes, the football players that I train over here in the University of Washington, they're like, yeah, my body feels like shit. I hate doing Olympic lifting. I don't feel like it makes me better at all. I feel freaking terrible doing this annoying lifting. It doesn't do anything for me, but I have to do it. Why? Because I apparently have to build muscle, useless muscle that's not really going to do much for them, and I can build muscle for them. I have my ways of building muscle on them and making it functional, but I'm not afforded the capability to do this because these idiotic coaches in this system that we're living in are perpetuating this nonsense that makes it impossible for a person like me to do what I know I need to do. So again, it's just structurally reinforced. We have indoctrination, then we have structurally reinforced a structurally reinforced system that creates these patterns, and it's just unfortunate that people have to deal with this. But again, there's no way you can justify a bench press. There is no rotation happening on a bench press. The shoulder is going through a fixed range of motion. There is no rotation. And when you think of the throwing mechanics, this function is non-existent on a bench press. It's internal rotation. And then there's no humerus pulling on the breastbone connection going on with it. There's no oblique activity that connects with that because the pec major connects to the obliques. That then connects to your abductors. There's an entire connectivity to it. The anterior and posterior oblique slings, they should include the pec major because it's as much of a part of the of that connection. And to say that the bench press in any way connects those links, all it does is it disconnects those links that it took millions of years to adapt. It's a disconnecting exercise, and it makes no sense to do. It's a waste of time. And like I said, the sooner people realize that, again, the better off they're going to be with their body. If you're an athlete trying to figure this out, this is what you need to be doing. You need to be avoiding those stupid types of exercises. How we're going to do that, who the hell knows, because I'm sure your coaches are pushing you to do this kind of crap, and you're almost forced into doing this kind of crap, and it's unfortunate, but at least some dialogue is being created here on such a useless and stupid exercise.
Man, my plan of walking into this literally was, I got that therapist background, so sometimes it may appear like I like to kick the front door in and just make changes, but my mentor, Leo, taught me a long time ago, Adam, if you got a tough task in front of you or somebody that's really, really hardcore on some cognitive dissonance, sometimes you got to sneak in the back window and be waiting for them upstairs when they get there. So what I,
of course,
so what I set out to do here is kind of breadcrumb just the way I kind of walked into FP, and also kind of feed them my own indoctrination. I was indoctrinated at 9, 10 years old, walked out by, here's what you do, you lift weights, right? I was the same way, even till just a couple years ago, So my plan is to kind of walk into these exercises exactly how they walk into it. They teach you how to squat. They teach you how to bench. Most of the time, they never teach you how to stand or talk or anyway, unless it's a football stance. But so to keep going, man, if we can get into the shoulders tomorrow or next week, sorry, we get into the shoulders next week, man, and kind of cover all the different variations of, how they all do them. That's my plan here.
Well, actually, Adam, and I know I'm saying this on the air, but I have a buddy of mine. He's a physical therapist from Germany. He's out here visiting me right now. We're doing some we're working on certification curriculums and whatnot through Functional Patterns. And so he's a really, really good – I mean, he's my colleague. He's a representative for Germany of Functional Patterns. And I was thinking that he could actually discuss the physical therapy industry with you. He's fucking brilliant. So I think next Wednesday I'll shine the light on his name is Karim Mahmoud, and he's from Germany. He's been doing physical therapy out there, I think, for like almost the last decade, and he's one of the most brilliant people I've ever met in my life. And I think I'll pass on the next Wednesday, and he'll be here in my apartment and whatnot. He's still visiting for about another week and a half, and I think I'll have him shed some light on physical therapy, health in general, and he will. I put him on my YouTube channel regarding the ketogenic diet before, and you can kind of already see somewhat of his background in terms of how he looks at humans, and I think he will be able to definitely shed some light on things in a way that you wouldn't typically hear a person doing. He's a very, very interesting dude, and I think I'd like to have that. And then I have other people at FP that they also have some experiences that I think I want to put out on here, because what I'm finding is I was in my gym yesterday, and I was just sitting there, and I have a guy from Spain, Germany, a girl from Toronto, I have another guy from Italy, another guy from Brazil. I'm trying to go down the list of everybody. Somebody that I brought over from San Diego, Santa Barbara, Hawaii. I mean, I have literally this whole fucking thing, and I'm just like looking at these people going like, wow, these are all better than all the best people in the industry. I managed to extract these fucking people from each one of these places, and they have amazing perspectives on life. I mean, they completely align with my values in terms of what it is. You do things that matter. But I think it would be good for me to get some of these guys on here. And since Kareem's leaving here pretty soon, I'd rather him do it right now while he's in these time zones and while he's here. And I think that would be kind of cool if we could get him on the podcast, and then a few of my other people. I think they'll be able to shed some light on their own, if anything, not just the parameters of just biomechanics, but their experience dealing with the crap that they had to do, because many of them were involved in the medical field. One of my guys, his dad was a doctor, and he saw the nonsense that they were doing in the field of physical therapy. He dealt with back pain and injuries his entire life. He had his lumbar spine fused because he didn't know what the fuck they were doing in physical therapy. He always dealt with lower back pain. Then he came to FP and we corrected that. So I think these would be opportunities to get just to get different perspectives on what we're doing at Functional Patterns, and how, since we're breaking the mold, how many doors we have opened for other just avenues of thought, I guess. But I think next week I might, if you're interested, I could have my boy Kareem come in, and he will break people off with some knowledge for sure.
Dude, I am in, man. I love how you're kind of spreading the love, man, to everybody in the FP family too. So yeah, anybody, man, that you want to bring on, you know, the Rampage is the voice of FP too, man. So yeah, of course, you got to ask me. That's it, of course.
Yeah, it'll be awesome. I think people, it's just that the whole notion that when something starts growing, people assume that we're going to end up having a bunch of non-thinking humans who are not capable of objective reasoning, that are just jumping on the next bandwagon, which functional patterns could be that. It couldn't be further from the truth. We have people that can stand alone on their own and succeed in life. I just managed to find these people and lure them into what the fuck I'm doing. So I think this is obviously one of the guys that's been doing that. He's had his own successful physical therapy business, and he's, like I said, he's very, very knowledgeable, and he's fully instituted the functional patterns training methodology in his practice, and he's seen ridiculous results out of his practice. So I think it would be a good view to show how functional patterns aligns with physical therapy, how it's like how there's a direct hand-to-hand correlation, and how we're doing so many things that they are completely missing and that they need to start instituting into their practices and whatnot.
Oh, man, I look forward to it, man. So the same time next week, Wednesday at noon, man, can consider it.
Absolutely, man. So I'll plan on setting it up. I'll give him my phone. I'll set him up and just do the same invites the way that we do it, and I'll make sure I get it taken care of.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you tackling this stuff again this week, man.
Absolutely, bro, absolutely. I'm glad I wasn't too incoherent because of this fast, but I'm actually starting. I think it's the third day when you start coming around and you're not hungry all the time. And, like, right now I'm not, like, I didn't think about food at all. I haven't really thought about food all morning. And so it's like you kind of get over this hump, and I'm surprised that I even made it through this, to be honest. I was like, I almost felt like texting you last night being like, you know what, let's push it off till next week. But fortunately, we got something going.
Well, man, you hit flow state, man. You were maybe it may have been a micro or macro or somewhere in the middle, man, but you were riding out in flow state as appetite suppressant, my friend.
Hell yeah, that's dope. Well, I'm glad that we got some good stuff out there, man. So I'll plan on seeing you next week, and I'll plan on having my boy Kareem see you next week, and I'll probably maybe follow that up the following.
All right, my brother, man. Take care, man.
Likewise. You too, bro.